Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly at this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today's guests are Amy Murdoch and James Grunke from the Erie Regional Chamber and Growth Partnership. Guys, thanks so much for joining us. James, let's start with you. Can you begin with discussing the government affairs position that you added?
Well, when I first came to Erie, one of the areas that I saw that the chamber was not doing, which many chambers do, is really exercising their role in advocacy. Really, that's a responsibility that most chambers embrace, and it wasn't being done here in Erie. And it's really, really important for a member organization like ours, if we're going to be the voice of business, that we're also the advocate of business. And so we were very fortunate that we were able to recruit Amy Murdoch to come to our team and be our first ever Director of Government Affairs. And for us, that means many different things. And I think, you know, Amy can kind of explain what her vision is for government affairs. But really, we want to be a resource not only for our members, but also for elected officials, so they can really understand how the business community is thinking about not only today, but the future.
And a perfect segue here, Amy, let's bring you in. Can you tell us about the vision that you had with this position?
Sure. So it continues to evolve. So I think if you'd asked me a year ago what the role looks like, and then today what the role looks like, it's a little bit different. But that's the nature of the work and really kind of serving a membership of businesses and stakeholders. So really, I see the role primarily as continuing to strengthen alignment between public and private sectors. And so I think we do that through three different ways. One is through policy. So one, we're working on building a formal policy agenda. What are the policy priorities and issues that are important for our businesses to be successful? Two is just having a presence, just letting elected and public officials know that we exist, meeting with them on a regular basis, finding out what's important to them, going to public meetings, and being out in the community. And then the third way that we're thinking about this is people. So how are we getting our business leaders or our members more formally engaged in the political process? So how can we encourage some of these smart business leaders and decision makers to use their skills in the public policy arena? So maybe that's considering a board appointment or running for office, whatever that may be. But really, again, just kind of strengthening that alignment between public and private.
I would imagine that relationships with elected officials is vital for you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest assets that we can bring to the organization is developing a level of trust with those elected officials so that they know that they can trust that we're going to do what we say we're going to do, but they can trust that we have a level of expertise when it comes to what it is that the business community needs and how our community can grow and become a community of choice.
Because there was a real void in this space, right? There was nobody locally doing anything for the local agenda for business. And so we see clearly we have a role here at the local level, right? And we want to have a great relationship with the local elected officials at the township, at the municipality level, at the county level. Certainly we need to have relationships at the state level and then federal. And so it's a big task that we have. But I think one of the ways that Amy is successfully positioning us is, one, trusted advisor or trusted resource, that when we give them information, it's factual, it's correct, and it represents a clear point of view. But we also want to be viewed early on the conversation instead of the end of the conversation. And part of it is just time. You know, this position is only 6 months old. So I think we've already made great strides there. But we want to be, when somebody's thinking of a new policy initiative, you know, we want to come bounce that idea by us. You know, what do you think? How would this resonate? Do you think this is the right path? And I think that's also a view that we see ourselves as, hopefully we can get to the point as trusted advisor, or at least trusted input.
How is the chamber identifying policy priorities for its members?
So I've, in the 6 months, I guess, that I've been in the role, I've worked at recruiting some volunteers from our memberships and business leaders that we have, and asked them to serve on a government affairs committee. So we have about 12 or 14 members that have that are kind of donating their time and expertise to that. And what we're working through identifying some major policy areas that we know are important to them, but then also surveying members to get a deeper dive on some of those issues and understand how those policy areas might impact their daily business operations.
This is really a work in progress that will continue to evolve, right?
It is. So I think as we build that formal policy agenda 2-3 years from now, that policy, those issues may change. Today, some of those top issues that we're thinking about are workforce development, economic development, and infrastructure. 10 years from now, it may change to have a greater focus on maybe it's K-12 education, and where today we're really focused on community college.
What are some of the priority issues today for the chamber?
Sure. So really those top three that we've identified so far, workforce development, and of course the community college is a big, big piece of that, economic development, and then infrastructure. So when we think about economic development, really economic development and infrastructure sort of go hand in hand. We think about a need for funding for infrastructure to have some pad-ready sites. And James, it, certainly if you want to elaborate more in those. But I think also in infrastructure, we think about even just the talent or workforce attraction aspect. With some of the plans for the Bayfront Connector, I think our businesses are interested in making sure we're making sustainable infrastructure investment to have some sort of iconic assets and some quality of place assets that we're building here as well.
So I think to Amy's point, we're trying to be very thoughtful of how we go about things, right? So when we look at our government affairs, how we're going to look at policies, we've really charged the committee to help us and help the board understand what's our decision matrix that we go through to say, is this a policy we're going to weigh in, and if so, why? And so, which is really important. And so that segues to the number one issue that businesses that are telling us is their barrier to growth here in Erie, Pennsylvania, is access to workforce. And so I've said this many times, past that statement, we don't really know what that means. Does it mean we don't have the right people, we don't have the right skills, we don't have the right training, et cetera? So we, as a follow-along for our targeted industry report, which we did earlier this year, which said these are the industries that make that Erie has a competitive advantage in, the next step after that is we're doing, as we speak, kind of a state of the workforce analysis so we can try to answer those questions so we can understand the gaps. It's not one thing to say, hey, there's not workforce. There is workforce. There are a lot of people here that are looking for work, but it's the alignment between workforce delivery and workforce need that we're really spending our time on.
I would imagine that you learned several things about that. Can you comment on that?
Absolutely. So we first needed to understand if we're going to try to recruit industry to Erie, which ones make sense? And so through our work, we found there are six kind of industries that Erie has a competitive advantage in. But I think the most glaring thing that came out of the report is while we have competitive advantages, unlike other places in the United States, we actually don't have any place to put anybody. We have a complete lack of inventory for commercial space, industrial space, and so it's very difficult for us to recruit any company to Erie. It's actually very difficult for us to help expand an existing company in Erie because of the lack of what we would call economic development infrastructure, which is a place to put them. And for example, any company that is doing, let's say a site selector is looking for a company, an industrial company, generally they're looking for any industrial site that meets, that's at least 50 acres. And so all of Erie County today, at 50 acre fully serviced parcel of industrial land is zero. So that's the report came of us, and it gave us good direction of where to spend our time. And again, that's why economic development infrastructure is one of our top priorities.
What is the Chamber's position regarding the community college?
Sure. So in June of 2017, the Chamber submitted a letter supporting the community college's application. So we're very supportive of the effort. We've been very engaged in conversation and really remain ready to plug into the strategy to help advocate for that.
In June of 2018, when I was looking at Erie from 2,000 miles away and not knowing really anything about Erie, I saw that I thought the biggest limiting factor for Erie's future was the lack of a community college. And since I've arrived in Erie, that belief from 2,000 miles away has actually been true. And I think there's a little bit of confusion when we're talking about community college, and particularly the way we're talking about community college. We're particularly interested in any workforce development system that's developing certificates and training and trades. We're not talking about academic community college. Not that we're against that. But when we're saying we need a community college, it's really as a training ground to meet the needs quickly and responsive to the business community. You know, we're engaged in some other conversations at the statewide level with the PASHE system. So that's Edinburgh University is part of that system. They're doing some work right now on their alignment with university. So we see it really not only just at the local level of community college, but we need to have a role at the PASHE and even at the Penn State level, since Penn State Barrett is here, that the alignment of offering and alignment of demand are one and the same.
Amy, is there anything you'd like to add about this?
No, I think I would just echo James's comments in that you know, we're certainly seeking any and all options and opportunities to help provide that service that our businesses need. And so we see the community college as another avenue that could help provide that service.
What is the status of the community college application process?
Sure. So the application was submitted a couple of years ago by the county. It's essentially sat in Harrisburg for 18 months or so. Recently, the State Board of Education held a special committee meeting to hear the State Department of Education's sort of analysis and findings on the application as to whether it met their criteria to move forward with establishing a community college within the state system. So those findings were very positive. They found those that the application met much of the criteria to move forward. And so next week on the 13th and 14th, the full State Board of Education will be meeting. They'll talk about this a couple different times within that meeting. And hopefully from there, we'll have a recommendation as to whether we'll be moving forward with the designation or not. They could be tabled at this meeting, so it could continue to sit down in Harrisburg. Of course, we're hopeful that they will decide to move forward. But a larger challenge really is getting through the budget process. So even if we're successful with the designation, we'll have to work through the budget process to get the funding to be able to move forward with next steps.
So we're at a good position right now, that we've had very good leadership by the county executive. We've had very good leadership by the county council. We've had Empower Erie that's been really active in moving this forward. The governor has endorsed that the Erie Community College be established. There are 15 community colleges authorized to be in the state of Pennsylvania, and there are 14. So we're not asking for anything unusual. Statutorily, we have the ability to do this. And now we need a positive vote next week by the state board to say yes, Erie County is going to be home of the 15th community college in the Commonwealth. And then, as Amy said, the hard work begins. It's one thing to be authorized, then we have to have the funding to create it. And so this is not a short-term proposition. This is a long-term proposition for the continued success of this community. And I would point out, I think there will be a lot of ongoing debate in the coming months what this needs to look like in Erie. Erie is the largest metropolitan area in the United States that does not have a community college. So either everybody else is wrong, or we're missing what everybody else has to be successful.
That's really a staggering comment.
Right, and yeah. Even in Pennsylvania, I think that people like to bring out that there is no community college above north of I-80, which is slightly not true because there is the Northern Pennsylvania Regional College, which does exist, and Erie is in the footprint of it, and we don't see this as a competing factor. I think there's room for both systems to exist. I think they do very different delivery, and I think they're both very important to the success. But when we're talking hands-on training programs, you need a physical presence, right? We can't do welding online. And there is nothing against an online education. I think that's many components of the future. That's the way the delivery system is. But at the same time, we still have to have a hands-on approach. And so we have always advocated we want a physical structure in Erie. Whose name on it is less important to us than we actually have this, we think, a huge void filled.
Any final comment on community colleges?
Well, I think we really are trying to be, we're trying to lead when it's appropriate for us to lead, but really where it is now, it's probably more appropriate for us to be very supportive of the efforts that are ongoing. And so we want to support and help where we're asked. We think we have an important voice to be at the table with, but this is not our issue. This is our community's issue, and so we just want to be part of it.
Yeah. I think our county executive and county council have brought a lot of leadership to this effort. They've certainly been doing this advocacy work far longer than the 6 months that I've been here. And so we're really trying to be supportive of their efforts, knowing that they've been working on this and I think negotiating on this for a long, long time.
And I think it's easy to overlook probably the most important voice that's got us to where we are has been the long support of the Erie Community Foundation on the community college. Right? They've been committed for over a decade of why this is important. And really, the funding for the effort, most of all the work, has always been under the leadership of the Community Foundation. They identified many, many years ago of why this is needed. It's been a priority. And I don't want to speak without acknowledging, without their efforts and without the leadership of the board members and Mike Batchelor, we wouldn't be having this conversation today.
Can you tell us how the Chamber is working with the EDDC and what progress lies ahead in 2020?
Well, I think we try to view ourselves as a very good partner for the EDDC. You know, they're committed very much to an 8-block area in downtown to really, I think to use their phrase, is they're trying to shock the market, which means let's just get the market active again. The unfortunate problem about Erie today is without patient capital, we just can't get a deal done. You could build a $10 million building that's going to be worth $7 million at the end, and that's a tough incentive. And so without having a tool in our community such as the Erie Downtown Development Corporation, I just think incentivizing investment here would be very challenging. So I think we've been a good partner with theirs. We've been a good partner with the Erie Innovation District as well, which is another component that is really necessary to move our community forward. We have really taken the leadership role in Opportunity Zones, which we think is a funding source. And so, again, we represent the 8 census tracts versus the 8 blocks that the EDDC represents. And so, to us, they're a project within an overall framework. But I would say, one, having them here is an advantage that most communities don't have. And two, we have the vision of our business leaders. The other thing that I really like about the EDDC is it was innovation that came from the business community said, we can't wait for somebody else. We have to solve our own problems. And they went and looked at other communities, and they brought some of the best practices back from other, in particularly Cincinnati. And I think that's why this is going to be successful.
You know, really, the Chamber has spearheaded the Opportunity Zone rollout this past year. Can you tell us about the progress that has been made and what your goals are regarding this effort for 2020?
Erie, fortunately, was an early adopter, or they early identified what a tremendous opportunity zones presented. And so we're very fortunate that the architect of the very first prospectus, Brett Weiler, who was then working at the city, we were able to recruit onto our team to really kind of elevate our role in opportunity zones. We had a very successful homecoming event in the late summer that brought investors to Erie to look at funding opportunities. We're looking at not just real estate, but also for companies that people can invest in. And those conversations are ongoing. We're very, very pleased with that. But more importantly, I think where the great work of both Amy and Brett have brought to us is they've developed what we call Investment Prospectus 2.0. And that really, the genesis of that is the White House has directed all the federal agencies to align their spending priorities or spending opportunities into opportunity zones. Well, nobody actually knows what that means. So Amy and Brett were able to identify the 160-ish so federal programs that now have been prioritized to go into opportunity zones and have presented Erie as kind of the living laboratory of where they should invest. And the importance of this is we need to show public sector investment to partner with private sector investment to show the confidence of why this market. And so we don't see this as a vacuum of public sector investment or private sector, that it has to be done jointly. And to my knowledge, no other community in the United States has done anything as sophisticated as we have, or that Amy and Brett have done, to present why Erie is the right opportunity for federal allocations as well. And maybe Amy can elaborate on that as well.
Sure. So I think, again, you know, the exercise is really intended to show why it's so important that public and private resources be paired together and not be considered in a vacuum. So the council has developed five different work streams, from economic development to safe neighborhoods. They also have this measurement and analysis piece, which is really focused on how do they measure the impact of their investment. So we've tried to put this document together in a way that shows we have projects across all of these sectors. So we're not just looking at downtown streetscape, just to support what might be going on with EDDC, but we're also looking at projects like reentry program. That's a potential workforce development project. Some east side revitalization and housing. That's a safe neighborhood project. So really, I think using this as a tool to show how we pair this funding across all sectors, so that we're not just hyper-focused on one area, but that we are working across all census tracts and we're working across all parts of the community as well. I'd also add in that measurement and analysis piece. I think with the capacity that we have at the data center and some of the work that the city has been doing with their Count Me In initiative, we think there's some interesting models that the council should consider for that measurement and analysis. We think we've come up with some ways that they can use in their work to measure their impact in opportunity zone communities. So we're also trying to show the council, if you really want to be able to show the results of your work, this is a model for how you can do that.
And just for clarification, the council that Amy is referring to is the White House Council on Opportunity Zones. And their executive director, Scott Turner, who's been in Erie, who is who we're working with on this. And so that's the council, is at the White House.
Is further progress regarding the opportunity zones one of the primary objectives for the chamber in 2020?
Increased funding into and increased investment into Erie is one of our priorities. And opportunity zones is just one tool. I think it's sometimes been characterized as this is one that's going to solve the issues of Erie, and that's not true. It's just a new funding opportunity that didn't exist that we think is necessary to make Erie attractive. I mean, opportunity zone legislation was designed for communities like Erie. It's to incentivize investment into neighborhoods and communities that have historically have never been invested in. So anything that spurs investment into Erie is a priority of ours.
James, this is your first complete year as president slash CEO of the Erie Regional Chamber and Growth Partnership. Can you discuss the state of the chamber closing out 2019 and what the primary objectives are that lie ahead in 2020?
Well, we really knew that 2019 was going to be a year of transition for us. And so I was primarily recruited to Erie to create a robust economic development strategy. And we spent most of 2019 doing that and actually raising the money that's necessary to implement. So our economic development strategy over the next 5 years will be, you know, standard business attraction, business retention, business startup, workforce development. We have some very clear goals that we want to articulate. We'd like to see the 2,000 jobs created over the next 5 years. We have everything that we're doing. So we spent 2019 working on our economic development strategy, but at the end of the day, we're a membership organization. And so really 2020 is now going to be looking about how are we servicing the members of our organization and how are we bringing value to the businesses of the community. And it's not to say that we're not, but I think we can do much better. And so most of our alignment will be really kind of on two themes. How are we providing people access to people and to information, to education, and how are we really flexing our advocacy role. I think the chamber is in a good position. We've added key positions. We're in the right conversations. We're really elevating where we need to be as an organization. And I couldn't be more proud of the people that work here. They do such good work every day. It makes it very easy for me to laud the great work they're doing. And I think we're going to be a force to be recognized.
Finally, we'll close with this. You've expanded the roles and established new positions here at the Chamber. Is it really all about better servicing your members?
It is all about best serving members, and it's also recognizing what our role and our responsibility is. As I said early on, the reason we did government affairs is because that's a responsibility that this organization had abdicated. We very much have to be relevant in government affairs conversations. But again, as I mentioned, we also recruited Brett Weiler, and he's all things capital. He's not just opportunity zones, but what capital resources should we be bringing to our community? Is it venture capital? Is it angel investment? There are a lot of tools that communities use that are not being deployed in Erie, such as this sounds very jargony, and it is, but we're not using historical tax credits for investment. We're not using new market tax credits. We're using some other tools that other communities have, such as a tax increment finance district. Those are all things that Brett is really charged to say, what do we need to bring to the table to really get us moving forward? We've had a workforce development position. We've recruited a new programming person, Amanda Kachurka. So that's, again, delivering programs that our members are demanding or needing to elevate their business. And so I think the additions we've made have all been strategic in filling the absence of our responsibilities. And so I see we'll continue to look for opportunities to grow the team where it makes sense to better serve not just our members, and it is our members. I mean, we are a membership organization, but we view all businesses in Erie County as our responsibility and who we want to serve.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard Fridays at 12:30 p.m. Join us again next week as Logistics Plus is in the Business Spotlight.